Campus Beard li ta' Punzaba jipprezenta Colin Fitz jistaqsi kull nhar ta' sibt u kull nhar ta' ħadd. Jiena Colin nistaqsi mistoqsijiet pertinenti lin-nies li jew jagħmlu xogħol interessanti, jew għaddew minn xi avventura, jew ippubblikaw xi ktieb li nħoss li għandu jinqara minn ħafna nies. Forsi żaru postijiet imbeda u ta' min nitkellmu dwar dawn il-vjaġġi. Suġġetti varji li jiena ċert li jinteressawkom is-semija ta' Campus 103.7 Colin Fitz jistaqsi nhar ta' sibt fl-erba u nhar ta' ħadd fit-tlieta ta' wara nofsinhar. It-13 episodju u l-aħħar edizzjoni għal din is-sensiela ta' Colin Fitz jistaqsi. U llum għandi għalikom mistieden, ħan nitkellmu bl-Ingliż għaliex huwa bażat l-Ingilterra. Jaf, xiftit bil-Malti, pero ilu jiex l-Ingilterra, u nofsu Malti, nofsu Ġermaniż. Iħobb il-Malti, anka studjaħ, u aktar tard fil-programm ħajdenna wkoll dwar kif għandu it-tir illi jarġa jistudja xiftit il-Malti u jarġa issib il-mod kif jarġa jitkellmu b'mod konverzazzjonali, pero ħanamlu l-intervista tagħna bl-Ingliż illum. U personalità li intajt magħha fuq il-YouTube, waqt li kont tinqalleb minn YouTube channel għal ieħor, dejjem insegwi daw id-diskussjonijiet, daw il-podcast dwar l-istorja u dwar il-ġrajiet kurrenti u dwar il-ġeografija fis-sens ta' ir-relazzjonijiet bejn il-pajjiżi, l-affarijiet internazzjonali u l-inserta preżentatur illi għandu diċendenza Maltija u inserta li kien ħajkun Malta għal-miliet, għal-żmien il-miliet u ħadd l-opportunità li stiednu fl-istudio ta' Campus 103.7 biex nitkellmu ftit dwar il-ħajja tiegħu, il-podcast u il-fatt ukoll li huwa kien student ta' ċertu profil għoli fl-Università ta' Oxford. Fil-fatt ġa kien hemm intervista miegħu fit-Times of Malta xi sentejn ilu. Qed nirreferi għal Lucas Seifert. So Lucas, welcome to the studio.
Mr. Colin Fitz, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
It's a great pleasure to have you here, and I'm so glad that you were available and that the universe aligned.
Yeah, I'm glad we made it work.
Yes.
Not so easy nowadays.
Indeed, but you happened to be coming to Malta just at the time when I contacted you blindly, saying I understand that one of the two presenters on this podcast via your website, which is called...
Critical Edge is our YouTube channel, is our podcast name. Mm-hmm.
Critical Edge,
that's
and
right.
And you also have a website, which is...
Yeah, criticaledge.com.
Criticaledge.com. And yes, I just happened to notice that it was said that you were Maltese. So I emailed you saying, I understand that Lucas is Maltese. Would he be interested in doing some sort of online interview? And you replied straight away saying, oh my goodness, I'm going to be in Malta, so we can do it face to face.
Yeah, no, it was nice. Always nice to be kind of approached by, I think, you know, by yourself. You're a figure here in the University of Malta, and for me to connect with the University of Malta is really important. I didn't go to university here, but I think it's a good university, a really good university that most of my friends have gone to, and you know, they've been educated really well here. So I think for me to, you know, to come here on campus is, yeah, it's a good experience.
That's
100%.
Great. That's nice to hear. I referred to an interview that you gave to the Times of Malta a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In, was it 2022, actually? The Maltese Guy at the Oxford Union Society is the headline.
That's right.
Claudia Calleja had interviewed you because you were one of the organizers, one of the people who took care of the famous debating society at Oxford.
Yeah, so it's a completely student, well, almost completely student-run society, the biggest student-run society in the world, I believe. And, you know, it's got a really prestigious name.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really good experience there, you know, well, semi-good experience for a lot of it. And I was there for a year running events, you know, giving my input, trying to really be involved in running elections.
Wow.
I did lose at one point, right? My goal at the time was, you know, to become the president of Oxford Union, you know, and there have been some great presidents in the past, you know, famous people, right? So Benazir Bhutto, you know, Boris Johnson was president as well, for better or worse. And that was kind of my goal at the time was, you know, to become...
straight to the top, because that guarantees quite a future.
Yeah, but you know, I was quickly humbled, stopped dead in my tracks, lost the election, and since then my life's been on the up, I think, because it wasn't great for me, I think, insofar as I was. It's quite insular and it's quite toxic when you run in the elections. It's lovely from the perspective of opening conversation and real debate. I think there's a lot there which is really positive. But at the same time, getting involved in student politics where it's a dog-eat-dog environment where everyone wants to, you know, get to the top.
Yes, at one of the top universities in the world.
And, you know, you're competing with people who are those kind of Boris Johnson-type figures. And
from a young age.
They all want to get to Westminster. They all want to get into Parliament. They all want to be Prime Minister as well.
So they're quite ambitious, shall we say.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was my cup of tea. I think in terms of the pressure that I was putting on myself alongside my studies at the time was a bit too much. And I'm glad that, you know, once that was over, I could get what I learned from that experience, take my creative energy and put it into starting the podcast, which was right after I lost my election there.
I see. Now, just to clarify for our listeners, when we say Oxford Union, it's the equivalent of the University Students' Council here in Malta, I assume. It's the Oxford Union is the students' body.
No, not really.
Or not.
So you've got the Oxford Student Union. You've got the Student Union. It's very confusing. The Student Union, which is basically the student body. And the Oxford Union is a private members' society.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew this. Started in
1823.
Okay. I would just see Oxford Union and I'd think, oh, okay, I'd assume.
Yeah.
There you go. You shouldn't assume in life.
There you go.
So this is one of the sort of organizations within the university.
Yeah. Something like, it's, you know, the Boxing Society or that.
The Environmental Society or this or that.
Well, exactly.
Okay. How interesting. So, and you were an active member in that for a year.
Yeah, I was, you know, I did the elections, I ran events, I, you know, invited Bear Grylls to come and speak, and I met Anthony Joshua and, you know, all that stuff.
You have elections for this organization.
Yeah, and, you know, you canvass, it's called hacking. You go around speaking to students, trying to convince them to vote for you over your fellow students. But it can be quite intense insofar as it's very... you know, full of spreadsheets and social events where you try and convince people to come on your slate. So it's a good training for, I think, people who then want to go into British politics.
Indeed.
A microcosm of British politics.
And you said, yes, being part of the Oxford Union, it gives you a head start in when you invite people. They're going to be more open to coming because it's a very famous debating society.
You've got a lot. So when I invite people on my current podcast, Critical Edge, you know, the amount of weight on him carries is very minimal compared to the Oxford Union, where you've got, you know, you're chatting to big names who are really keen on coming.
Indeed. And you mentioned Bear Grylls was very
famous. So I go on Bear Grylls and then, you know, I have dinner there with Stephen Fry and these amazing experiences where you're kind of like, oh, pinch me. But at the end of the day, it's not really the same when you run it yourself and you have your own podcast. For me, setting it on my own platform, on my own terms, is just a completely different experience. When you're there, you're doing it for somebody else, right? And you're doing it for the society, which is a good thing as well. And it is a society where I think there is a lot of open debate that is had in a positive way, but completely different when I've kind of taken that in my own stride and tried to do it as a project of my own independently.
Just to mention some other names who have been invited over the years and delivered a speech and debated at the Oxford Union Society were Gaddafi, Gerry Adams from Ireland, Malcolm X, Natalie Portman, as you said, Stephen Fry, Michael Jackson, Shakira, Malal Yousafzai.
Yeah, Malala.
Malala, of course, from Pakistan. Sepp Blatter from the World of Football, David Cameron, Senator John McCain, Dame Judi Dench. Over the years, very historic, and you were part. You etched your name in a very small way in its history. Well done.
Thank you, first of all, Colin. I mean, look, yes and no in terms of etching my name into the history there. There are pictures on the wall which I'm in, right? Mm. And there's also pictures of Einstein on that same wall. But that doesn't necessarily put me on the same level, right? So I felt really proud when that article came out in the Times of Malta. Really, really proud to be representing Malta as well to some extent. Mm. But, you know, there are so many people that go in and out of that society. There are three presidents every year.
I see.
And it's quite easy to be swept away by those big names. But when you're in it, it's quite limited the amount of power that you actually have. Mm-hmm. And you're very, very, very quick to be then swept under the rug as a new generation of hacks, so to speak, kind of come into the society with everyone kind of clambering to be on the top there. So I think, yes, it's a really cool thing and I'm glad I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's easy to over-idolize it as well.
So you graduated from Oxford. You studied English and English literature.
That's right, yeah.
English language and literature.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you graduated.
Yeah, by the skin of my teeth.
It was hard work.
No, yes and no. But
okay. Yeah. Well, you did make a reference to being under a lot of pressure. And later on, we'll talk about a subject close to your heart, mental health as well, which you are openly say that you had some problems with.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that later on. And but kudos to you, despite all the pressure, you managed to get through. You graduated. You're working now.
Yes, I work in sales in London.
But you also have this podcast, which you're continuing with your colleague Ollie.
With my colleague Oliver Walsh. Shout out Ollie. Yeah, he's best friend of mine, and we work very hard alongside our quote unquote real lives to keep it going, to keep our little side project going and pushing.
What did he study?
So he did philosophy and French, French literature, yeah.
So quite a good combination.
Very intelligent guy, very, very verbose.
Did you meet at university?
We met on the first day at university there. And yeah, I mean, look, ultimately I only am where I am in terms of having, you know, the podcast, having gone to university because of the friends I met along the way and the family that supported me there. So yeah, Ollie's been a big help in terms of developing myself intellectually. A lot of people, when I joined Oxford, told me, you know, it's about what you learn outside the classroom rather than inside the classroom. You've only got 2-3 hours, maybe 4 hours a week where you have tutorials and you sit down and you chat to professors. And I skipped all my lectures. We had those tutorials, but otherwise what you learn in your development, personal development and intellectual development happens outside the classroom with the people you speak to.
Mm-hmm. Very high caliber, I assume. People from all over the world.
Yeah, some, you know, everyone there is, at the end of the day, you know, just another person. Mm. And I didn't particularly feel like when I met people from other universities that I was somehow better. Definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you do have people who are really specialized, really interested in what they do. And I think what does stand out at, you know, people at Oxford is they're extremely passionate about what they're studying and learning, and they'll speak with some real passion in their eyes. So I think, you know, from that perspective, it was good for formational experience for me.
I understand. Let's get to know you a little bit better. Tell us a bit about your childhood, your schooling, the fact that you're half Maltese, half German.
Yeah, so I lived in Malta till I was 17, and I'm a very proud Maltese man. I have Maltese friends. I have a Maltese mother, and I grew up in Balzan. I think to some extent when I was 17, I felt a little bit that Malta was feeling a bit insular for me at that stage of my life. So I moved to Germany for a year to also connect a bit with my German roots. My father's German. My grandparents are German, and I wanted to improve my German, and I wanted to live in Germany and experience that. And I joined the military there for 9 months. And while I was there, I applied for Oxford and then went to Oxford right after that. And that's been kind of the track from age 0 to age 21, 22 was basically Malta, then a brief stint in Germany, and then Oxford. But up until 17, it was Malta. I was at Chiswick House School, St. Martin's, and then St. Aloysius as well, which was, St. Aloysius was also an amazing experience. So I had a really good...
That was your sixth form.
Yeah, I had a really good schooling experience in Malta.
And you decided to join the military, which is not something a lot of young people speak of doing nowadays, or seem they... Even when there's talk of, God forbid, another war or something, a lot of these vox pops, oh, I would never join the military, I'm peaceful, I don't believe in this stuff, it's all warmongering. But you decided to join the military. Is it because perhaps you were an outdoorsy type person, like a scout or something, and you thought it would be an interesting experience? Or What pushed you there, apart from the fact that perhaps being in the German military would really throw you in at the deep end in finding your German roots?
Yeah, it's probably more the latter. I think anyone who knows me knows I'm not exactly a Boy Scout. I think in terms of people's opinions on the military, I'll never forget. I was in Oxford in the first week or two there, and someone just turning around when I said I was in the military, and you know, scowling and saying, "Well, I don't believe in the military." That's fair enough, right? If you want to be John Lennon and have this idealistic view of the world without a military, that's probably, to some extent, could be a really beautiful world, but it's just not the world we live in, right? And I think it's important not to be naive, and I think it's important to really understand the realpolitik of you know, our current situation, but also look back 100, 200 years and look at Europe and all our neighbors and understand that I think a strong military allows you then to have a bit more freedom. And if Europe right now had a stronger military, I think they'd be less pushed around by people like Trump, because a large reason why Trump can do what he does as well is because he understands that Europe is so reliant on him. I think when I joined the military, there was a couple of things going through my head. I wanted to toughen myself up. I think it's a good experience to do that. You know, you're there free will. You're under no duress. It's safe. You're getting trained. You're getting paid. You know.
Which branch of the military did you join?
So it was the Marines. But
that sounds quite tough.
Yeah, yeah.
That's tougher than just the regular army.
Well, yes and no. I wasn't sent out there to fight any wars. Right. I was trained, and the boot camp was intense. And then from there, it was pretty regular. The sort of tasks I had to do was not too intense. But at the same time, you know, when you're getting screamed at in German, that's also an experience. Oh. And I think that kind of, you get thrown in a world which is so separate to anything I'd experienced in Malta, that's what I just try and chase, something which is novel and new. Yeah. And that's why I also wanted to go to Oxford right after that, is to try and switch things up. And I think, you know, if you've got, it sounds cliche, but if you've got these little moments or pockets of your life, 18, then 21, 25, I like to switch things up as much as possible, remain and try and, you know, experience that novelty and that newness, because that's what keeps me excited.
But you only stayed in the army for 9 months.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to do that? Don't you have a sort of minimum amount of time you have to spend? Or, I mean, why only 9 months? Where did you feel that was enough?
Yeah, I think it was a good experience for 9 months, but I think the minimum is 7 months.
And it's not the draft, is it? Because they stopped that in Germany a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah, no,
when every young person has to either do military or voluntary work for a couple of years.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's a particularly bad idea.
Not draft, I think it's called something else. Military service,
yes,
used to be called,
yes,
in various countries. The draft is something else. That's when young people are forced into joining the military when there's a war on, which is something else.
Well, yes, and I actually want to send a questionnaire out starting next year to young German men and women to potentially gauge how many people may be interested in rejoining or joining the military in the future. For myself, I thought, you know, it definitely wasn't something that was forced upon me. Mm-hmm. I had to actually get a German passport and apply for a German passport so that I could be eligible. I am German, but I didn't have a passport at the time. So it was really something that took some admin work to do, to fly to Germany, do the assessment center, kind of pass all the tests. And then from there, I thought, let me experience this for a little bit. Let me throw myself in the deep end, and then let me swiftly move on.
Okay.
Because I think there is a certain train of thought there where, you know, I was told, you know, don't think, you know, just do what we tell you, don't think for yourself, and keep going. And for me, as the kind of person I am, I wanted to, you know, at age 18, 19, then start developing myself from a more intellectual perspective.
Yes. Did you ever feel you were perhaps bullied because you were slightly different from the majority of the recruits, or were you picked on because of the Maltese? The little Maltese man. What's he doing here?
Yeah, I mean, look, yes and no. I mean, ultimately, I'm
nothing you couldn't handle.
I'm gonna be honest. As in, I think, you know, I try not to ever let myself get bullied, and I think I'm not. I think there's also, you know, an element where, I'm going to be honest, I'm a white guy. I have a lot of privilege. And in my life, I think, you know, as a Maltese, you're not exactly some minority figure or a minority kind of group. So I think when you're there, you get the jokes made of your accent, and my German wasn't great, and it can be difficult. But I think it's also limited the extent to which that really affects you. I think a lot of it was in jest, and none of it was really that malicious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that can kind of go off, you know, water of a duck's back in a way. So nothing too intense. But it's a good question, Colin, because I think in and out of the German army and then into England, there is a question of, you know, who you are as a person. Are you German? Are you Maltese? Do you start to get an English accent like I have now? And how much of your Maltese identity you lose when you then go to Germany and England?
That's an interesting point. We'll talk about that in just a second.
Yes, yes.
I just want to dwell on the army and the military just a little bit more. As a middle-aged man who remembers watching war films and war comics as a child in the 70s, it's pretty cool to handle that equipment, though, isn't it?
Shooting a gun, you feel like you're top of the world from 200 meters with night vision goggles, shooting targets with these big semi-automatics. Or
do you get to mess around in tanks and things? And
not quite tanks, but you know, you get thrown into these, you know, trekking through the wilderness, right, with face paint, and then jumping into ditches and getting chased around by, you know, they've got the, you know, they pretend that the people who train you then pretend to be the quote-unquote bad guys and try and find you. And it's a little bit like scouts to some extent, right?
Or paintball.
Yeah, and you're there and it's cool. And, you know, the people come in and they check your room for you and they make sure that everything's tidy and they scream at you if it's not. And
I'm sure as part of your personal development, it also helped you mature, but also not look for a fight. But if you're in a situation where a fight happens in a bar or something, you can handle yourself better, or even, especially because I've spoken to numerous people in the military, you don't really want to get involved. It's not about you winning a fight. It's not you showing off. But it's a question of handling the situation in a way that it is over as quickly as possible. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, yes, but I think it's also a question of masculinity, right, where it's hard to escape the need to feel like, I am a man, I can handle myself in this bar, in this situation, and no one's going to kind of disrespect me. But I think it's also really important to understand that, you know, if there's two guys in a bar, you could have gone to the military and you can be a black belt, but 2v1, you're going to be outnumbered, right? So I think my point is, I'm never really going to be in a situation, I don't have that much fighting experience, I did karate for a few years, but I'm not going to be there and say, because I was in the military, you know, standing in a line and doing some push-ups, that I'm now going to be able to handle myself in some massive scrap. That's not really the kind of person I am, because I'm always, A, want to avoid fights, but
support that too, absolutely.
But B, you know, to your point, I do think it did instill some extra confidence in me. So yes, I take your point, and it does instill confidence that, you know, you can say, I've been through this experience, I'm more confident in myself and who I am. But at the same time, I think it's really important to have a lot of humility about my own abilities, and I think...
Very well said, yes, yeah. I get you. Now, identity, the Maltese identity, German identity, and now, how long have you been in the UK?
Almost 5 years.
5 years, yeah. And was it easy to assimilate into the British way of life?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. If you're a Malta, if you're a Maltese person, and I went to a private school, the cultural similarities between Malta and England are there. There's big similarities, and I found that when I was at university, I could, you know, relatively quickly tune into, you know, the same frequency as other people, and talk about similar things and YouTube channels we watched as children and music we listened to growing up and so on. But there is, to some extent, a gap there, right? You grow up in different countries, and for me to assimilate fully, I always felt, even at the Oxford Union, that there is a bit of an outsider complex. You're always from the outside trying to get your way in. And I felt that even more at work now, the professional work in sales. With an accent, you're always, to some extent, going to have some certain preconception about you from others. And my father was German, living in Malta for 25 years, still really faces that. It's not highly negative or anything like that, but he's, you know, when he opens his mouth, people immediately know, okay, you're not English, you're not Maltese.
It's another factor that you have to factor in social relationships.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it does add an element of difficulty, especially when I then come back to Malta and people ask me if I'm English.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Okay. So, and that's going to be quite weird. It's quite a weird experience because you don't know where you stand. In England, you're not English. In Malta, you're maybe not fully Maltese. And in Germany, I'm not German.
In fact, if I had to tell you my impression, your accent is actually, the way you speak English is quite neutral. Mm. It's not properly one of the English accents, and there are many.
Yeah.
It doesn't. I wouldn't think that there was any German in you at all, the way you speak. Maybe I could still tell that if I met you in Malta, I could still tell that maybe you were brought up here.
Yeah, well,
a little bit.
Well, that's the sad thing, I suppose, is that it's only a little bit, and that you could maybe might tell. Mm. And for me, you know, my Maltese roots is something I feel so connected to. When my friends come from England and I show them Malta, I show it with such pride, mm-hmm. because I am Maltese and I feel Maltese. And the fact that then, you know, that doesn't come out in my accent is actually so closely tied to who I feel I am as a person. So, but at the same time, you know, humans try and survive. So when I'm there in England, I try and assimilate to that language
indeed,
and that accent and that culture.
Indeed.
So it's a bit of code switching, which is what we spoke about as well before the show.
Before the interview, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you did
an interview about that as part of your podcasts.
David Crystal.
The critical...
He's a linguist, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but your podcast is called...
Critical Edge. Yeah.
Critical Edge, I keep
forgetting.
There you go.
Please,
at my age, you start to forget.
Please prepare better for your interviews.
I have it all written in front of me. I wasn't looking.
No, but your accent as well, you know, has a tinge of Britishness. I know you said that you...
I lived there for a while. Yes, and also I'm an actor, part-time actor. So, having watched a lot of British television since I was a child, I always was imitating these characters on screen. Was he on the screen? And it's just when I speak Malti. Some people say I speak Maltese almost with an accent. They think that I learned it as a foreign language almost.
I understand.
Even though I can speak Maltese very fluently, no problem.
Yeah.
In fact, I broadcast in Maltese on the station. But yes, but if I'm in the UK, people kind of think, okay, he could be British, but maybe he's Welsh or maybe he's French.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's even like, to some extent, to say in England, right, if you're from Liverpool or you're from London or you're from Manchester or you're from Northern Ireland or from Wales or from Scotland, right, you're all technically from the UK. But the cultures between those different regions is so vastly different, both in terms of accent, in terms of, you know...
Attitudes.
Attitude, rhetoric, political views, you know, register.
Mm-mm-mm.
So I think it's in a similar way. You can't necessarily group everyone under the same umbrella. He is as Maltese as this person is Maltese. It's a lot more complex than that. But at the same time, right, there are certain characteristics that make you Maltese, and that's a tricky one to also break down. But I do feel like having the language, for example, knowing how to speak Maltese really well, to some extent is quite key to being Maltese. And I think the fact that my Maltese has over some time, you know, weakened, the ability to speak Maltese has weakened quite a lot since leaving the country because I don't speak it, you know, I'd go as far as to say that affects how much I am Maltese. Because if I now go and I never return to Malta, when I'm 80, I'm not going to be as Maltese as someone who's lived there their whole life.
I guess so, absolutely. You do intend to study Maltese again, maybe, and
relearn
some practice and relearn
it. Yes, 100%. That is my 2026 mission.
Okay, yeah, your New Year's resolution.
And then, because I think Maltese is a beautiful language, a mix of Arabic, as you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, Arabic, French, Italian, English, and it's on our shoulders. It is on the youth's shoulders, the Maltese youth, to make sure that the language survives and keeps going, because we're the only country in the world that speaks Maltese. So if we don't speak it, no one will.
Mm-hmm. You got as far as O level standard. You
Yeah. I did my Maltese O level.
Maltese O level. So well, good luck with that, and that'll be great. Maybe next interview we do, we'll do it in Maltese in a couple of years' time.
That is a good goal to set, Colin.
Fantastic. Let's take a little break and hear one piece of music. I think we have so much to talk about. We're going to stick to one piece. Usually I try and play two pieces of music that are related to the guest.
Mm.
So did you manage to think of a song or a piece of music that represents you?
I did, actually. So I was thinking, I said, okay, if I play Central C on Colin Fitz's radio show, that would probably be too much.
What type of music is that?
No, that's rap music. He was my most listened to artist of 2025.
Okay. British rapper?
Yes, and he does represent me. But I think
know is that in the UK there's something called grime.
Yeah, I do really like British rap, but you know, I don't know. I suppose it doesn't necessarily represent me, and what they rap about is not something I can necessarily relate to. But that is the sort of music which I really love listening to. But I think for the purpose of this interview, I think we can do Smashing Pumpkins.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
1979. I don't know if you know that song.
I do know it. It came out when I was in my prime, way back in the 90s, and when they first came to prominence.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Oh, beautiful song, and you know, it's a bit. The first song when you search Smashing Pumpkins, the first song, but I think it's the first song for a reason. The album Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness is one of the greatest double albums of all time.
There was the other song, Disarm, on that album, which is
insane.
That's a huge hit. Yes.
It's beautiful.
And Billy Corgan is, like you, a podcaster.
Yes.
and is getting quite a lot of... I think he's won an award for his podcasts interviewing other musicians. Billy Corgan, the leader of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, I think he drove all the other band members a little bit crazy, I think, by the end of it there. I think he wanted to kind of name it the Smashing Corgans rather than not want to kind of accept that it was a group effort.
Go on.
I was going to say 1979 in terms of a song that, you know, is a coming of age song. As I was leaving sixth form, as I was in sixth form and then leaving Malta and now coming into my 20s, the song just finds new meaning every time I listen to it, because it's applicable to each stage of life as you move away from one country, away from one group of friends into another. And I'm sure if you listen to it now, you'd be able to find lots of different meanings to it as well.
I find that amazing because it's a song that came out 10 years before you were born or eight years before you were born.
Yeah, in the 90s.
So it's the equivalent of me getting really into the Doors in my 20s. The Doors were around in the late 60s, a few years before I was born, in the 70s. So it's amazing how the generations just, at some point in their lives, look back and get inspiration from the music that came before them. But let's hear 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Let's do it.
The choice of my guest, Lukas Siebert, here during Colin Fitz, Yistasi Colin Fitz Inquires on Campus 103.7.
Ride above the street.
So, 1979, The Smashing Pumpkins, the choice of Lukas Siebert, my guest during Colin Fitzjustazi today. Now, to conclude about Maltese, German, British identities, what part of the German identity has remained with you after your year living there, and also, of course, your relatives, your grandparents, your father?
The beer, mostly.
The beer!
And it's there, it shows. I've gained a bit of a gut since since leaving. That's the one thing I've really kept strong. But no, in any case, the football, the beer, the food, the friends I made there in the army. I've got one or two close friends who I remain in contact with, and my grandparents live there. Mm-hmm. I try and visit them every year.
Which part of Germany? Because again, Germany, you mentioned the UK, different Germans in different parts of Germany.
Yeah, in English, I think you say Westphalia, but it's not Rhine-Westphalen. So in the west of Germany, I believe it's the largest of the 16 states. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, Düsseldorf. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I go to Germany, I feel quite at home. Uh-huh. Obviously, my accent belies me, and it's clear that I'm not 100% German when I'm there, but I feel quite at home when I'm there, and I would consider going back for a little bit at some point.
There's no conflict between your Maltese side, which maybe is a little bit more laid back, and the Mediterranean, and the German efficiency?
Only insofar as no one mentions World War II, and then it's usually fine. Now, on a serious note, I think
that's a Fawlty Towers reference there again.
Yeah, don't
humor.
Mention the war, right?
Yeah,
there you go. I don't know, Colin. And ultimately,
you don't think about these things.
I do think about them, but ultimately, I think it was such a globalized world now that while yes, there is these strong identities that I've spoken about. I don't necessarily tie myself so closely to, let's say, German efficiency or Maltese being laid back. I think now, to some extent, I see them merging together. And I think in myself, I see them merging together. And this is why I speak about, you know, sometimes this lack of identity, because it's to your point. I think, am I this German efficient guy, or do I want to lie on the beach in Malta and relax? And I think it's a mix of everything. Mm. And I think, you know, keeping my understanding of who I am as a Maltese person and keeping my understanding of who I am as a German person while also just being myself is important. And when I'm there in Germany, people say, you see Maltese because you love to wear T-shirts and this. And then when I'm in Malta, people say, you're quite organized, Lukas. You're quite German in that sense. And I say, yeah, maybe. So I think it's a mix, right? And I think I don't think it's a clash in that respect.
Mm. I learn something new every day. And also, perhaps, do you think young people in general, your generation, shares this kind of attitude that they don't see sort of different nationalities as having these different attributes as much as perhaps someone from a different generation, an older generation, someone like myself does?
Well, this is the question, and this is not something I can give you a strong answer to, because I don't know. I think... I think it's, you know, it'll depend on someone's political views. If someone's more nationalist, if someone's more populist, they're more likely to, you know, see Malta for the Maltese or England for the English. And I think that feeling of, well, who is English, who is really English, is one that's really pervading the current political conversation, both in England and in Malta. And I think it's a really complex question that is probably too complex to talk about right now.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think it's also a question of, you know, with the internet and with globalization and people's ability to travel to different countries and immigrate so easily, I think, yes, people are understanding that the lines between being Maltese and being English and being Italian are blurred, and they, to some extent, have always been blurred, but even more so now. And I think there is that attitude. But at the same time, people want to preserve their culture.
Like you were speaking about Maltese.
It's important to preserve the Maltese culture and English culture and, you know...
German, Italian.
Yeah, and immigration is not necessarily, you know...
A threat.
It's not necessarily a threat. It can be a threat, but it's not necessarily a threat. So I think, you know, there's a fine balance to be struck between making sure that... you know, a culture is preserved, and we understand that we are Maltese, and you know, I am German, but also understand that we're all humans.
Mm-hmm.
We're all humans, and we all
so come together feel in a certain way.
We all feel the same feelings and the same pain and the same happiness.
Mm.
And part of the rhetoric around immigration often is because, you know, there's a lack of humanization. People are not willing to see others also as humans.
But
just to make a small caveat as well, that's not to say that worries about cultural erosion are not justified, especially in a small country like Malta.
Now, Lucas, one of the subjects, apart from politics, philosophy, history, that you discuss along with Oli and your guests, and you've had some very high-profile guests on your channel, your YouTube channel, and your podcast.
And what's the Critical podcast called? Edge. Yeah, you go. You go this time.
I've written it down now. So, again, because it was typed, but it was very small. So it's actually called Critical Edge, Cut Through the Noise.
Yeah, that's our little tagline. That's our little tagline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're trying to, I think there's a lot of, to put it bluntly, there is a lot of noise out there, and you just completely inundated online with everyone's opinions about everything who may or may not actually be experts on the topic.
Mm.
We spoke about immigration, the amount of people that will speak about the economic effects of immigration and have actually got no real clue is quite palpable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're trying to do is try and bring on people who really do know and ask them the right questions.
And we'll mention a number of varied, very varied guests who have been guests on your podcast. Peter Mandelson, British politician since the 90s, very famous. Dominic Sandbrook, one of my favorite historians, mostly focused on British history, but also an authority on world history. Dave Rubin, American right-winger. Vince Cable, politician.
Yeah, yeah.
Politician. Steven Pinker.
Yeah.
These are all names in various fields. Mental health is a field that you like to explore as well on your podcast, and is also close to your heart.
Yeah.
And you experienced a few ups and downs yourself, and would you like to tell us a little bit?
Yeah, I probably won't go into too much detail, but I will say, you know, at the Oxford Union, I set up a mental health awareness panel, and there's a man called Gabe Howard, who is a lovely man who came to speak at the Oxford Union, and then, you know, through that contact, we got him on our podcast and we interviewed him. He struggles with bipolar, and he always says that mental health and physical health, right, are spoken about in very different ways, but they're not actually that different. If someone has a broken knee, they're happy to tell everyone that they have a broken knee, and they'll get their cast signed by everyone. But if someone's kind of got a mental health issue or mental illness in whatever form, right, 25% of people very roughly have some mental health issues. It's a very rough stat. So, but I will throw that out there, that it is 1 in 4 people. And yet people are so held back to speak about that. You know, I right now would not go into detail about my own issues with mental health, though I would speak about in detail my broken knee if I had one. I would do, and that's largely because of the stigma around it that is still so prevalent. We've come a long way, but I think it is important that slowly as a society we become more willing to talk about these things. And I think in the last 10 years probably there's been some backlash, and people are worried that people use mental health and as an excuse. I can't go to work because I'm depressed. So I think, you know, it's about educating people on what mental health really looks like, what policies we can have in place to protect people and their mental health, and then going from there. But as it stands, it's both still really stigmatized and still kind of
abused.
Maybe. I don't actually know, but I do know that, you know, people's understanding of what, let's say, depression is still not there, I think, for example. And I think people's understanding of what OCD looks like, of what schizophrenia really looks like, is not there. And I'm not saying I'm an expert on it, but I think there needs to be some kind of education, further education on it.
Did you manage to find the help you needed when you needed it, though?
Yeah,
do you think there is enough help out there?
Look, my mom's a psychologist. She's, you know, the best mother I could ask for, and she's super supportive. And
unless you were in that TV show, what was it, Big Bang Theory,
where, yeah,
where the mother was a psychologist and the son, but that was obviously played for love.
Well, I think my friends say that I was a bit of a test experiment growing up, and she ran all sort of tests on me. But in reality, the she's extremely understanding and supportive, and I was telling you this earlier, I was privileged enough to be given all the resources I needed. But there are so many people out there who are even restricted by finances, who can't get the help they need. And then when they're scapegoated for, let's say, not going to work because of their mental health issues, that's often, you know, people are not fully able to understand the difference between genuine mental illness and then, let's say, calling that laziness. And I think, you know, there needs to be the support needs to be there for those people as well.
So mental health is something that is discussed during some of your podcasts along with Oliver. Critical Edge, Cut Through the Noise. You can find it on YouTube. It's also on Spotify, all the platforms, right?
Yeah.
We've mentioned some of the many high-profile guests that you've had. However, I mean, you have 4,000 subscribers, just over 4,000 subscribers to your channel on YouTube. What about Spotify and the other platforms?
Do you think similar levels.
Similar levels.
Yeah.
It's a respectable number. It's not huge, however. And I doubt you can make a living out of creating these podcasts, even though you've managed to attract some high-profile guests on there.
Mm. Well, look, 100%. It's small numbers, Colin. I'm going to be honest with you. They're small numbers. And some specific episodes have garnered some attention. Recently interviewed reform counselor George Finch. And that did the rounds, to be fair. But in general, the numbers are low. And I think that's fine. I mean, look, I work a full-time job. So does Ollie's completely busy with other things as well. So I think as we try and do it, starting up right now, we're expending our creative energy, we're trying to build something, but we're also being realistic about where it goes. And I think if I'm correct in saying this, it takes a few years to build something in a market as diluted as the podcast industry.
That's true.
And there are so many people out there doing this, and you know, we think we bring something different to the conversation, and we're going to do our best. But ultimately, yeah, I think the rate of growth is something that, you know, needs to be looked at, needs to be studied, and you need to look at the data there and how can you grow in a sustainable way and in a quicker way.
I'm going to play the patriotic card.
Yeah.
So the Maltese listeners, people listening to this show here in Malta and maybe around the world, thanks to the website. But this is a fellow Maltese who's got this podcast. Subscribe to his channel. Subscribe
Thank
to
you,
the YouTube channel as Maltese. It's our duty to support our friends, our blood around the world. But honestly, it is a very good podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Colin.
Critical Edge.
Critical Edge. I appreciate that. We've also, you know, we're doing... We have a publication called Cutting Takes,
okay,
where students, mostly students, write articles, put that online. It's like a little publication where we speak about culture and politics, and we get different opinions on current affairs, but also more broader theory. I think what we're trying to do is create some kind of community where things are not so polarized, and we can really get into the nuance of often very divisive issues. And just to your point about growth, I'm always someone that's setting my sights very high. But I think there's also space to accept that, you know, some things take time. And, you know, if you fill a room with 4,000 people who've subscribed to your channel, that's also quite a lot. And I think in the age of the internet, where everything's measured in millions, right? Millions of views, billion subscribers, whatever it might be, or billion views, then 4,000 looks like a little. But at the end of the day, I suppose...
You started with zero.
We did start with zero.
So, yeah, that's quite impressive when you look at it that way. And you've only been doing it for a couple of years?
Yeah. 2 years, I'd say. I mean...
We're in 2025, at the end of 2025, so you started in 2023?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I think, you know, we're messing around a little bit in 22. But look,
Do you keep costs down by doing all the work yourself?
Yeah, we do a lot of the work ourselves. We've got some people who work for us, like for editing and stuff. And we do have some people who get involved on a kind of voluntary basis. Often people our age who just want to be involved in the project and grow together. And that's what I mean by community. We go out in London together. Mm. We have drinks. We speak about whatever we want to speak about. And then we all kind of try and pitch in to building something, which is, I think, hopefully giving something of value.
Again, anybody listening who has maybe relatives living in London, friends, the Maltese community there, especially the young people, perhaps they'd like to reach out to Lucas, and I don't know, contribute ideas, contribute.
Go for it.
Be part of your conversation. Then, by all means, can be contacted via your website.
Yeah,
Critical Edge.
Yeah, it's not the Lucas and Ollie show. It's Critical Edge. We want to promote critical thinking, and I think it's something that a lot of people want and a lot of people have the hunger for. Colin, you're doing the same thing, right? You're trying to have honest, open conversations. So we're maybe doing it for a younger audience, or trying to bring it to an audience which is maybe more focused on politics and that side of things.
So to conclude my interview here with Lucas Seifert, who is 23 years old, half Maltese, half German, living in the UK, a graduate of Oxford University, and also with Ollie Walsh. Ollie Walsh, the brains behind Critical Edge, Cut Through the Noise, a podcast that's available on YouTube, on their YouTube channel and various other platforms. Couple of words to conclude. Lucas, your view as a 23-year-old, what's your future going to be like, you and your contemporaries? Let's say maybe here in Malta, in the UK, possibly Germany. What do you think? Is the future bright?
For me, it's success can be measured in a number of ways. Do I want to be rich? Do I want to be happy? I think, first and foremost, I want to be happy, and I think I want to live my life surrounded by people I love. And I think I've been lucky enough that throughout each experience in Malta and Germany and England, I've met some amazing people, but I've had my parents and my sister the whole way kind of by my side, getting me through that. And that's why I've been lucky enough to go to Oxford and start this podcast and have the resources that I need. And I think in the future, I don't actually know what it will look like. I think people who know me will also know I try and kind of say, well, I'll figure that out in a month. I'll figure that out when I get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So my main goal is to do things to the best of my ability and spread the good vibes, to be honest. Spread the good vibes.
And understanding.
Spread the
shouting.
Spread the good feelings. Trying to understand things from reasonable perspectives. And I think ultimately, just live a good life. I want to live a good life, drink a lot of beer, and read a lot of books, and spend time with the people that matter.
Yeah, you mentioned beer, so we'll say don't drink and drive. We're recording
100% don't drink and drive.
We're recording this program during the festive beer season as well. But it's been an amazing pleasure, honestly, getting to know you and hearing your opinions. Wise words as well, even there at the end. Lucas, my name is Colin Fitz. I've been interviewing Lucas Seifert. I urge you to follow Lucas's podcast and his writings online. Critical
Edge. You're not cutting that out, Colin. You're keeping that in. I'm sorry. I recently interviewed Anthony Scaramucci, and my colleague Ollie called him Andrew. And he was the former head of communications at the White House, and he forced us to keep that in because that's what this is about. This is what the industry is about. You make mistakes. I didn't do everything perfectly this interview. I think I could have spoken more eloquently on topics like mental health, and you could have maybe pronounced my surname better. You could have probably got the name of my podcast correct, but that's fine because you've invited me here, you've given me coffee, and you've given me a really good conversation.
Who am I to contradict the words of Lucas Seifert?
Ah, there you go. You got it this time. Thank you, Colin.
Well, that came Colin Fitz, you start safe for me, or clean up on Seba Campus. Programmi li xandar narta sibt fl-erba ta' wara nofsinhar, repetizzjoni il-ħadd fit-tlieta. Programm li jitella' wkoll fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus 103.7 tistgħu issibuh fis-sezzjoni on demand. Nerġaw niltaqgħu bħallum ġimgħa fl-istess ħin sa dakinhar, grazzi u saħħa.